Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis with Rebecca Bond, Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and some key additional guests from the temporal nexus.
Aren't you one of those key additional guests?
No, I'm the temporal nexus.
A virus infection, which actually proves to be false, September 13th, 1999, and is the giant leap genuinely beginning to look like a great stumble in the dark? Well, we'll find out as we actually go back and forward to space 1999 for another Resonance Rewind. Off we go again. September 13th, 1999, a day in fiction probably as important as September the 11th, 2001, happens to be for real life in our dimension. But what will the Resonance Rewind team make of this Gerry Anderson-Sylvie Anderson collaboration? The last series, of course, on which they worked together before they had the great split, the great divide, and Gerry went down the line of Terrorhawks and other such grand schemes. And Sylvia, well, she just became Lady Penelope. Let's find out. Robin Pierce, would you like to actually do a mini review courtesy of Gary Girani, who I must admit I don't agree with in terms of his thoughts on this, but what are your opening lines for Breakaway, the season one, okay, episode one of Space 1999?
Well, according to Gary Girani, who is, of course, one of the Rewinders, the premise of the series is actually interesting. Man in the year 1999 had been using the dark side of the moon as a dump for nuclear waste. A self-maintaining scientific installation, Moonbase Alpha, is a kind of eternal night watchman at the dump, but also has the less routine job of preparing for extensive space exploration. Lo and behold, a new planet called Meta wanders into the solar system, and as a result of the mounting pressure to explore it, Commander John Koenig, played by Martin Landau, clearly the best man for the job, is put in charge of Alpha. Curious disasters begin to occur. Some astronauts on the moon begin dropping like flies, while others, their eyes turning bright green, go insane. Koenig's top officers, Professor Victor Bergman, Barry Morse, and Dr. Helena Russell, Barbara Bain, are baffled. But while they attempt to solve the mystery, Koenig is pressured to prepare the Metaflight by his visiting superior officer, the unsympathetic, hard-driving Commissioner Simmons, played by Roy Dotrice. The cause of the disasters is finally discovered to be magnetic radiation, but before any action can be taken, it causes the nuclear waste to explode, hurtling the moon out of its orbit into the vastness of the galaxy. So the Odyssey begins with the moon and its 311 reluctant passengers from Alpha careering in space.
Superb. Now, here we go. Lee Katzin directed it, of course, and he also was noted for directing episodes of The Wild Wild West, Mission Impossible, The Mod Squad, and Mannix, plus a variety of other things. Rare, because Gerry Anderson normally directs the first episodes of series, so he didn't in this particular instance. And, of course, it was written a screenplay by George Balak. Let's find out what the team actually made of this. I'm very impressed that, obviously, Rudi Gernreich's Space 99 costumes are still being echoed with Rebecca Bond. She could almost be a Moonbase Alpha Soul who's actually wearing her full jacket here. She just needs to have the sort of grey sleeve or dark sleeve on there to work through that. Rebecca, stylistically turned out.
Do you know what? I didn't even think about that. I feel like I'm dressed for the occasion now. This is great. I must say, I quite enjoyed this. I thought the sets were great. I think the whole spaceship looked fantastic. So visually, it was great. Some of the special effects gave me a bit of a giggle. There were parts where I didn't know if it was actually meant to be slow motion or low gravity. So, you know, there was a bit of conflict there. But I think the storyline was very gripping and intense. And I wanted to watch on. I really liked the ending. I think they left it open enough to want to watch on, but I also feel like it achieved a lot just in that first episode, which I was really impressed with. So I would watch more. I think I would. I really enjoyed it.
Brian Johnson, of course, responsible for many of the special effects, has done stuff with us on the Madrid Drive before on other shows. Mm-hmm. And certainly echoing 2001 A Space Odyssey, we actually have, you know, the strange fake virus that we have manifested in terms of 2001. We also see the journey beyond. And of course, we have, in the words of one Space 99 fan, the beginning of doing for television what only Stanley Kubrick had done previously in the cinema. Whole aspect of elements and eagles put together within that. Jessica, what did you make of it from North Carolina? Did it float your boat? Of course, it's the second episode of Space 1999 you've looked at. The first one, of course, being The Black Sun, which is when they're into their travels and journeys across the galaxy and so on. What are your thoughts?
I think it made a bit more sense than the other episode that we had watched. I remember feeling like I was like high that whole episode. But this one felt a bit more like it made sense. Well, as much sense as it can, like moving away from the Earth, but it was really fun. I thought it was a cool little show. And it was funny seeing like the year 1999. And it was actually like the date was September 9th. And it was like 2 days after my brother's birthday. So that was funny.
Exactly. A very significant moment in an alternate dimension and an alternate reality, in which, of course, it might well have been UFO 1999, a series we'll be looking at next week, just in the prefix UFO, because it would have been the moon base set forward. And that explained primarily why Earth was so geared up to be technologically fitted on the moon, because obviously they had 20 years battling against aliens to actually cope with. So I think it's set in that whole dimension. Jenny, your thoughts on this from no longer Norway, of course. You've made that journey back to the British Isles, so presumably you're back in Newcastle.
I am indeed, yes, back in Newcastle. Of course, I watched it when I was a child, one of my favourite TV shows, and I do actually think that the opening episode is particularly good. I don't think the second series was as good as the first. I love the music, I love the intro. I like the attention to detail. I like the cinematography. I think the acting is good. I mean, obviously, you've got to leave aside the science because there's lots of major scientific errors in there. And the acting was also good. So, yes, really enjoyed it very much. And yeah, as Rebecca said, it's a gripping story and it's miles better than the other episode that we watched.
Again, we might agree to differ with respect to that. But of course, the notion of science that is there. I mean, they touch on it, they address it. I mean, we don't know. I mean, we have lots of theories. We have lots of theories about viruses and various other factors. We don't know what killed the dinosaurs. We have lots of theories about that. We can't necessarily sort of put that down. It's interesting that one commentary has related to the mysterious unknown force that's never identified as such on screen. And it's almost to be taken not as a kind of science fiction based thing, but more a kind of science parable, that what we actually see here is the Ark, and the tale of obviously the demise of Earth or civilization with only 311 souls, as Robin said, effectively heading off to that side of things there. You mentioned the music, of course, Barry Gray's theme music, bombastic fanfare, drum roll. Barry, of course, the master of creating big sounds for the screen and certainly echoing that side of things as well. Martin Landau, I think, actually nails it, as indeed does Barbara Bain. I'm a big fan of, obviously, Victor Bergman. But isn't it interesting that here we have Robin, without really signposting to such an extent, a genuinely multiracial, diverse cast?
Well, yes. I think this series... Well, when I watched the Breakaway episode earlier in preparation for this show, it was only the third time I've seen it. I haven't seen it for years, and I'm afraid that I have to substantially reevaluate my feelings about the show, because I've always had misgivings about what the moon as some sort of, you know, starship and all the rest of it. But looking at it today with maybe fresh perspective, I really do have to reevaluate it. One of my biggest complaints about it was, so the Earth goes tumbling off and the moon goes tumbling off and the Earth survives. Well, we would have catastrophic effects. And I didn't remember that there was a brief news flash, which is cut off, which kind of mentions it. It never shown, but then this isn't the Earth story.
It's the most expensive television series of its time. They can't actually go into the San Andreas fault collapse and all sorts of things. Besides, they'd left that for Lex Luthor in 1978.
Earth still be here. And the only quibble I have with it now that's been addressed is they were all basically stuck to the floor with the G-force. Well, surely if it can stick these guys to the floor, the whole of Moonbase Alpha would similarly have been flattened, wouldn't it?
Well, I did say that you have to kind of overlook some of the science.
Oh, I have overlooked it. I have elevated this one, as you will see when I give my final mark. It loses a mark on that. But I loved the all-too-credible notion of Earth dumping its nuclear waste on the dark side of the moon with absolutely no regard to consequence, because we all know that is exactly what would happen.
John Kenneth Muir, of course, one of the writers who's a huge fan of Space 1999, and Adrian Sherlock has also written extensively in praise of the series, which, as they both actually say, was really the only space series we actually had. It was sandwiched between 2001 and Battlestar Galactica, and was something which certainly sort of opened up a range of other elements. Rebecca, turning to yourself, in terms of the kind of political allegory, I mean, here we have Simmons, played by Roy Dotrice, clearly not to be trusted. He's lied to John Koenig. Koenig, the moon base commander that Koenig takes over. Gorski effectively has also been suppressing information, hasn't been putting anything out on that basis. I mean, it's almost like the present government, isn't it?
Yeah, I think obviously there was quite a lot of political consciousness in there, especially with, I'm really bad with names and characters, but there was that really like ruthless guy that was just very much like, this is how we're doing it, by the books, like quite, so it is very sort of like that dictator kind of like feeling to it. But I think looking at that sort of political thing, I think it was interesting to see how they linked it to Earth, as Robin said, with the news thing and the kind of risks with flying too high, if you like, and really venturing where we shouldn't. I think that's another thing that's very, and you see it kind of in everyday life, you know, we've discovered all these amazing things, but there is that limit where you cross and you have to look back and in retrospect, was it a good idea to have ventured that far and to really like mess around with that sort of thing? So with the nuclear waste thing, I think that's definitely, hopefully not something on our plans, but along those lines, it's the kind of issue that, you know, is scary. The things we can do, it's scary. And I think there is like a recognition of that line where you have to draw it. And I think that was very, very prominent in this episode.
The risk is great. The decision, of course, is yours, as Helena Russell effectively says to John Koenig in one of the interactions from that point of view. And Jessica, what about yourself? I mean, it's often been said that, you know, what we've got here is certainly, it's the antithesis of Star Trek. It's the kind of the human race who aren't in the 23rd century. These are recognizable, fallible human beings who effectively, as Koenig actually says, that great leap for mankind that, of course, Neil Armstrong actually had and his immortal words, it's beginning to look like a stumble in the dark. Is that something where actually there is, you know, a kind of manifestation here of, well, these are just human beings trying to get by as best as they can, and obviously in a very serious way as well.
I think the idea of it being kind of like opposite to Star Trek is interesting, because it does feel a bit like the characters feel very different from the attitude that there is in Star Trek. And I think the idea that space exploration in this ends up being a bit of an accident in a way is kind of a very interesting premise. I think it's different from the other series that we've watched. It kind of reminds me of Lost in Space, where it's like it was not an accident, and now it's like, you know, you have to have like human determination to survive, and that's what characterizes like how well they do in space. And this adventure was a mishap, but I think that's what I find very interesting about this. It's so much of I think like human history ends up, you find that quite a lot of accidents are in there, so I think that that's kind of funny to look at.
And no spoilers, of course, but Simmons does actually appear later on in season one, but actually, some might say, gets his just desserts, but we'll look about that if we're looking at the Lost in Space parallel between, obviously, Zachary Smith and the lines from that as well. Returning to Robin again, as I say, it was the end of an era for the Andersons, this particular sort of package, because clearly their relationship wasn't great at this particular period of time. The divorce was pretty much around the corner. They'd worked together very much on UFO. There's lots of characterizations within that. And I believe that there was also a slight tension because obviously we have American input as well with Martin Landau, Barbara Bain, Canadian input, Barry Morse, and so on for the international market. Did you get a sense that maybe some of these things didn't quite fit? It wasn't kind of as slick an operation as, shall we say, they used to do with Thunderbirds.
Well, not really, because when you bring actors in, you lose a little bit of the control, because the characterization of a role is largely down to the actor. You have absolute control over what a marionette would do. The actors themselves seemed less made up and puppet-like than they did on UFO, where everybody seems to have really pancake makeup on. From this episode, I would never have guessed, and I don't believe that I knew when it was first broadcast in approximately 1975, that Martin Landau and Barbara Bain were in fact married. I was vaguely aware of them from Mission Impossible, but I didn't know that they were married. And from this, I still wouldn't. I, of course, knew Barry Morse from Fugitive. And where there he is a a relentless character forever after David Janssen. In this, he shows a far... He's the kindly face of science. He is what maybe Wilfred Hyde White should have aimed for in the second season of Buck Rogers, but just ended up looking like he'd wandered onto the wrong set.
That's another time for another space as well, of course. Barry Morse's character, Victor Bergman, of course, you could say, as we mentioned I think before when we talked about Black Sun, you have the British Experimental Rocket Group, BERG, from Quatermass, and of course you have Victor Bergman manifesting that line as well. And of course it is the character of Bergman who reveals to Koenig, things are far more serious than I expect you've been told. To which Koenig replies, the virus problem, there's no virus, effectively. So again, he's faced with a range of problems.
Carrying on, you know, the comparison with Star Trek, even though I am a Trekkie down to the marrow in my bones, I find the cast and crew of Space 1999, and please shut your ears, Larry Nemeczek, I find them more humanly relatable than the crew of the Enterprise, because the crew of the Enterprise are more idealized and what we would hope to be. I think that the crew of 1999 are more what we actually are.
We're looking for answers, Commander, not heroes. To which Koenig's response to Helena Russell, I didn't know you cared. Jessica, any particular highlights of the episode where, I mean, apart from obviously the wire work and the contact lens, which obviously suggested that I've got to get out of here, got to get out of here now, got to get out of here now, as he presents to sort of smash all sorts of things together. Anything that appeals to yourself in terms of takeaways for Breakaway?
I like the idea of like the moon floating away. It reminded me a lot of Despicable Me. I was just getting like Gru vibes from that whole thing. And I was like, where's Gru? Like, where's the minions? Like, but I also like just the scene where they were like all falling down with like gravity and like stuck to the floor. I thought that was so funny. I actually watched this episode when I was a bit tired, so I didn't find it scary. I was like, oh, that seems like a good time for a nap. I would enjoy that. So I think that episode kind of was just very fun for me. So
in the post-pandemic world, should we ever actually get back to the York Maze and envisage and test out their gravity chamber, you'll know exactly what it feels like to be pressed down by the force of gravity without the fall thing collapsing. So I can attest from personal experience that that does actually operate in terms of how gravity plays around with you and the force and how it's it works. Rebecca, what about yourself? What highlights did you actually have? What was it, the interplay between the characters, the dynamism? Was it the case of the bombastic music? Was it just a case of the way the narrative bounced along?
As I said, I think the storyline was a really strong point. I think it's, for me, as someone who doesn't usually gravitate towards these sort of shows, I have to be gripped by the storyline. I have to want to watch on. So that for me was a strong point. I really enjoyed it. I'd watch it again and I'd watch it through the series. I also think the sets, as I said, were brilliant. I really liked the whole like view of the spaceship, and there were shots of space that I thought were really well done. But yeah, the moon part was definitely, I had the same kind of visual in my head as Jessica. I also really liked the characters. I think they were well developed, and as Robin said, a lot more relatable and I think more human. So I enjoyed those too. But I like the music. As I think Jenny said, like the music is just great. I love the title sequence. Everything about it was great, I think. I think the only thing for me was how funny these special effects were, when I couldn't quite work out whether they were going for slow motion or if it was a gravity thing. So,
of course, we also have the onset of the comm lock, which prefigures the whole notion of portable communications devices, etc. And of course, I also mentioned the 2001 connection. I'm not sure whether, apart from Robin and myself, probably Jenny, we've actually seen 2001 A Space Odyssey, but there's certainly echoes of that. And of course, Pink Floyd's title, Dark Side of the Moon, as well, within that whole field. So you're playing around with those aspects. Jenny, what about yourself? Do you have a particular favourite character? Do you go for Helena Russell, or is it more Sandra Beans? Sandra Benesch, I should say, played by Xenia Merton, or Paul Morrow, the sort of third in command, or is it Victor Bergman? Where do you actually sort of sit in terms of choice of characters?
I actually think it probably is Victor Bergman, actually. I really liked I think the acting, he's obviously a great actor, and I just like the way he was just always totally calm in any situation, and very fastidious about everything. And even when he was very concerned, he still managed to sort of portray it in a kind of chilled way, which I really liked.
He does have an artificial heart, as we find out later in the series, so maybe he just had to keep it calm, basically. Again, something that prefigured and foreshadowed Jean-Luc Picard's as well. We talked about briefly Paul Morrow by Prentice Hancock, but let's mention who to many people was actually an underrated star of the show. And I think it's generally said that he is often seen as being an important character and a likable fellow as well, given that he's Australian. And in fact, it was Australia that tested the series first. They, in this instance, got all the merchandise before Britain because they wanted to see how it was going to go down in Australia as a series. And that, of course, is Alan Carter, played by Nick Tate, who has that choice to make. Does he fly back to the moon? He can make it. I can make it. Back to the moon, or does he go back to the potentially half-destroyed planet Earth? I mean, tough call. Which way would you have gone, Jessica? Would you have gone back to the moon, or would you actually say, oh, the heck with those Alphans, I'm going to go back to Earth?
I think the moon ended up being the fun adventure. I'd go on the moon, honestly. Why not?
the fun adventure, but without minions. Rebecca, what about yourself? Where would you have actually taken that Eagle spaceship?
I'm not too sure. I think living on a spaceship is quite scary. I mean, I'm quite claustrophobic. The thought of not being able to leave the perimeter of the... Oh, no, couldn't do it. But the moon does sound fun. If I didn't have the fear, I'd definitely go for the moon. But I think I'd rather perish on Earth at that point.
Tough call. Of course, it does also demonstrate, Robin, the joy of the joystick. I mean, how sophisticated the remote control by joystick was manifested by, of course, Paul Morrow's work in flying the Eagles remotely.
I love the Eagle craft. Were you to ask me, would I have gone to the Earth or the Moon, which you didn't, I would have definitely gone back to the Moon, because what you're forgetting is the Eagle was a short range craft. They would have never had the fuel to go back to Earth. But what I don't understand is we saw they could control these Eagle craft remotely. Fantastic. Why, oh why, then, did their fearless leader go on a solo trip to the danger zone when they could have sent an unmanned probe?
For the same reason that he went out with Victor Bergman to test that fish scale-like force field in the Black Sun, just as a symbolic gesture, to actually sort of give people hope, that's all.
Two suicidal gestures in one day by the same man. Nobody questions his sanity. How come?
Jenny, would you have gone to Alpha? Is it an environment you would like to have stayed in, or is it a case of no? It's a great shame that Ed Straker wasn't actually there to look after the whole sequence.
Yeah, I'd have been straight round to his house. I think I'd have turned around and headed for Mars, actually.
Which I don't think was being occupied at this stage. I think it was just a case of they discovered the planet Meta. And again, interesting use of words. Meta, of course, Greek for beyond. We hear about metahumans. We don't really see much more of Meta as the series develops. It's almost as though it's there. You get that buzzing side of things there. And then it seems to sort of gradually fade it away, presumably because they've headed into all sorts of other areas and aspects within that.
But to be fair, they probably passed it on their way out of the solar system.
But thankfully, at least the acceleration provided by that nuclear fission and fusion dump or nuclear waste dump, magnetic energy, of course, was what it was what was generating from that perspective. So, Rebecca, overall, then, in terms of the sequence and the look of the whole thing, does it kind of? I mean, you've already said you watch more of the whole thing. Is that because of the characterization? I mean, Robin was saying that they tended to be more well-rounded in some instances than what we see in Star Trek. I mean, again, I think it depends on the case. Does that also kind of add to the charm of the series?
Definitely, but I think it's a combination of everything. As I said, I've said good things about the set, the characters, the music. I think it was a really well put together episode. And as I said, I haven't watched any more, but I would. So it'd be interesting to see if my opinion would stay the same, because from the sounds of it, that tends to be the strong episode, that first one. So I'll have to give it a go and see if I like it, because it did draw me in. It really did. I think this is one of the ones that I've really loved the concept of the idea, and, you know, as you say, overlook the scientific aspects, but then I'm not too educated on that sort of thing anyway, so I probably wouldn't know if you didn't tell me that. But yeah, I think it was really strong in all areas, but I'd really be interested to see the character's story and how they develop. So definitely characters, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would also echo the notion that really you need to see it as science fiction allegory and kind of commenting on things. And maybe, yeah, at times, and I think the last 12 to 14 months have kind of demonstrated that, we are kind of stumbling in the dark in terms of, we have issues, we have areas. Yes, vaccination programs are out there, but you've got COVID variants in India, COVID variants in Brazil. You've got all sorts of other challenges within the whole system. Who knows what could actually happen? Jenny, let's go to that whole notion of marking this particular aspect. What are you going to score Breakaway, the first episode, of course, of the two seasons of Space 1999?
Well, as I said, I do think, just to say to Rebecca, I think, I don't know whether Robin agrees, the first series to me is much better than the second series. The second series was, they had all the issues and it was quite different. And yeah, I think this is a great episode. It's got a few flaws, but you've got to consider it's nearly 50 years old. And I think for something that was made at that time, I think it's a really, you know, it's almost like a movie. I'm going to give it 9.5 because it has a few flaws.
Yeah, I would have been at a 9. I'm probably going 9.5 because I think repeated viewings does tend to suggest it opens things up. A bit like Robin, initially, it took me a number of years before I started appreciating what messages were coming across within this. And I think it does merit, and a bit like C.S. Lewis would say about any text, if you can revisit it and still actually find something new in it, it's worth revisiting. It actually sort of deserves that particular aspect. So, Jessica, how about yourself?
I give it an 8. I enjoyed it. I think that I connect with the characters a bit more in Star Trek for some reason. Maybe it's just because they're more iconic to me, but I thought that the story was really interesting. And I love the whole moon floating away plot, so good 8.
Yeah, it's fair to say, I don't think John Koenig as a character is somebody you necessarily warm to. I mean, we've seen Martin Landau, obviously, in The Outer Limits. We've seen him in excitement, obviously, of Space 1999. We'll go on to see him in future weeks in terms of his iconic role in hand in Mission Impossible, he says, giving a little tease to the elements within that. But he's somebody who certainly wants to get the job done. But there is that sense that ultimately he will make the decision. I mean, he's the one who basically says that ultimate thing, which I can never imagine Kirk doing. It is my decision that we do not even attempt to try. And that effectively he says, oh, well, fair enough then, we're doomed. And for actually a commanding officer to effectively sort of say, because we've evaluated the whole thing, we're not going to even try to get back to Earth, I think it's quite a bold decision and a bold to have that as the lead character. But 8 is what you've gone for, so it's fair enough. Robin?
If you'd have asked me first thing this morning, I'd have said 4. 6.
Lucky.
I enjoyed it so much. I'm going for a 9. I don't do half numbers, as you well know, but it's getting a solid 9. The only reason it's not getting the 10 is, well, because of John Koenig's sort of death wish of going out where unmanned probes should go. I could understand him going with Victor because they needed to see, but the second time, oh, come on, man.
Oh, this was technically the first time, because obviously, unless, of course, you're going through the Black Sun and you've gone back in time, and indeed all times are occurring simultaneously, who knows what could be the case?
My marks for that episode will never change.
Clearly in the Department of Assignment Earth, or is it simply a case of the bounce back impact of Robin having actually watched a motion picture with Melissa McCarthy in that we'll be discussing in another show entirely, which probably we won't even... In fact, I can probably say it's highly unlikely whether that Thunder Force will ever be considered in terms of Resonance Rewind. I'm just saying that now, just in case people are thinking, well,
I would take a day off then, just to give everybody a break.
But we still await Rebecca's view, as I say, Rebecca, who is wearing an almost iconic Rudi Gernreich-designed Space 1999 top from this particular case. What is your score for this particular episode, Rebecca?
I'd say a 9. As I said, it's probably one of my favourites I've seen so far. I really liked every aspect of it. And I think now that I've been pointed out the scientific aspects, that's probably the only thing that just knocks off that slight mark. But I did love it.
And we also, of course, have the voice of Shane Rimmer as well as the shuttle pilot. And Shane, of course, looking down on from high. Great sort of iconic character within the Gerry Anderson universe. Voice of Scott Tracy, writer of many sort of episodes as well. So good to see that he was also being utilised as well to good effect. Next week, we're back to another Gerry Anderson series. We're back to ITC, a series which actually might be a bit tricky to access unless you actually have the DVDs. We'll just have to wait and see. Jessica, I think you might, living in America, be okay in this particular instance. If you're in Britain, no way you're going to get the whole notion of confetti check A-OK. The episode from, of course, the only season. So there's only one season, unless, of course, you see it as season one of three seasons, which eventually became the two seasons of Space 1999. It gets very confusing. It's UFO, Unidentified Flying Object, Ed Bishop as Commander Ed Straker, a heart-rending storyline about his personal life, which again argues the whole notion of do you put the job before the personal life? Do you put the personal life before the job? How can things actually transpire in all sorts of ways? We've had a look at UFO before. This is another insight in terms of that series, UFO, Confetti Check, A-OK. Until then, of course, with more music from Barry Gray to actually keep us safe in the Earth, Starship Earth, that we continue to work through, and as yet no sort of nuclear fissions are actually impacting, we will speak again. Keep on resonating.
Thank you.